This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Wells Tech, episode 490 for Tuesday, March 28, 2017. I'm Sally Draper, one of the regular co-hosts of Wells Tech, but already I bet those who watch our show realize that my co-host, Martin Spriggs, is not here today. We had a little group meeting and decided he earned a vacation. And so Martin is enjoying a vacation down with family in the Austin, Texas area. So blessings on your travels, Martin, and hopefully it'll return you to our office refreshed and ready for more technology and ministry. That's the topic of our weekly podcast, Wells Tech. We've been doing it now for 490 weeks in a row, and we're closing in on that magic number 500. Pretty exciting stuff for us. And those of you that have watched for a while know that one of our regular features on Wells Tech is education technology discussion. And joining me today, so that I'm not doing this solo, lucky for you guys, is our friend Jason Schmidt coming to us from the Omaha, Nebraska area. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks, Sally. Happy to be here again.
Thank you. We're thrilled to have you. I understand that you've had some exciting days recently with your robotics efforts there in your school district.
Yeah. Last weekend was a really eventful weekend. we do the first robotics competition for our high school students. And those of you who have been kind of communicating and following along with some of the things that I've had going on, we basically get a couple of totes just filled with parts, and we're supposed to build a big robot out of it. And it's really hard, but it's really a lot of fun. The theme this year was a steampunk. They have a different theme every year, so we did first Steamworks this year, and Sally's got the website up right now. So if you go to firstinspires.org and go to the first robotics competition, you can see all the crazy things that we had to do. You know, we were building a robot that had to pick up these gears and put them on a peg, and then people put them on another peg and, you know, built up enough momentum to be able to turn a propeller, and they got points for that, and climb a rope at the end, and shoot wiffle balls, and it was just wicked. But it's so much fun. So I would suggest that anybody that and these events are free to go to, by the way. So if you have a regional in your area that you want to attend, you can certainly check that out. I think the website, and Sally, this is just brand new, so I just now thought of this. But the website is, I think it's theBlueAlliance.com. So I'll just share my screen real quick so you can see what that looks like. But if you go to theBlueAlliance.com, you're gonna see events that are going on. And then they also have everything is live broadcast. So as these things are going on, they start on a Friday, they go Friday, Saturday. You can check out these streams if you can't make it to one in person, but, you know, we've got Cleveland coming up, we've got Chicago coming up, we've got, you know, Washington and North Carolina, and there's just so many cool things going on. So it's really a lot of fun to see it, and if you can make it in person, there's so much fun to watch, and totally free admission and things like that. So encourage anybody who's interested in robotics to check those things out and see what First Robotics is all about.
Yeah, I'd love to see a competition. I'm not quite sure I'd be hardy enough to participate, though. It looks like a big undertaking if you've got to toss wiffle balls and climb ropes and things with a robot. Very cool stuff.
Well, yeah, they say it's a varsity sport of the mind, which really it makes a lot of sense. It's about as long as a football season, so it takes about that much dedication to get it done.
Awesome. Well, congrats to your team and second year you've been doing it. So hopefully we'll hear from you again next year and hear how it went next year.
I hope so too.
Awesome.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're actually here to talk about a different topic today, Jason. We are returning to the New Media Consortium Horizon Report. This is something we've been digging into throughout the season this year on our EdTech podcast. The Horizon Report is published annually, and they actually publish a lot of different flavors. They have a higher ed Horizon Report, they have a library Horizon Report, and the concept is just like the name. They're looking at what's on the horizon for education. The one we've been focusing on is for K through 12. And in general, they divide the report into three sections: key trends, accelerating technology adoption, so things that are pushing the edge, then significant challenges impeding technology adoption, and then some important developments in education technology for K through 12. And this week, we're actually going to focus on one of those challenges because I think as good as the technology is and as proven as it can be to assist in education, if we can't get past these hurdles, these significant challenges, it's not going to have that broad-based effect that we're hoping for. And so the one we're focusing on this week is actually Advancing Digital Equity. And there's a little short two-page report that you can read through. We'll include a link in the show notes. But I'm more interested in just kind of a general discussion. Maybe, Jason, we could start by talking about what digital equity is and why it's such a challenge.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the way that we've kind of been talking about this, you know, the frame of reference in my district and in our state has been, you know, the concept of not everybody can either afford high-speed internet or have access to a high-speed internet in the area where they live. So, you know, obviously there are income restrictions. You know, if a family is has a lower income, it might be more of a luxury to be able to spend, you know, $50, $60, $70, $80 a month to have high speed internet in their home. And you know, and for many of us, you know, our cable bill is you know, upwards of $100 a month, and that, you know, that includes our entertainment packages and things like that. But you know, if you just put the internet access part of that, that can be very expensive. And for a family of, you know, a family that may be struggling to provide just for their basic needs, that whole internet access issue becomes more of a problem for them because it's a very difficult financial burden. And then similarly, you know, within Nebraska anyways, we're a very rural population. Mm-hmm. So, you know, two-thirds of the population lives in Omaha and Lincoln. And, you know, we have, then everybody else is spread out over, you know, a very large area. And it's very difficult for families who, you know, may have the means to be able to afford $50, $60 a month for high-speed internet, but the best that they can do is satellite, which, you know, may or may not work some days. You know, it depends on how fast the wind is blowing, which in Nebraska is all the time. And you know, there might be issues with, you know, there's a lot of lag. It might be a decent download, but you know, an upload speed is, you know, you've got a lot of latency in between connections and things like that. So all of those factors kind of compound on each other and make internet access something very difficult for a lot of people to be able to have, both that's reliable and affordable.
And of course, we're concerned on two prongs, really. We're concerned about our schools having internet access. And I know I can speak for right here in New Ulm, you know, the metropolis of New Ulm, our high school, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, is out on the edge of town. And there isn't high-speed access out there affordable enough for the school to have, you know, a large quantity of students on the internet during the school day. And so definitely we want to be concerned about our schools having proper access. But now, as more and more blended learning is happening. Students are being expected to use the internet as part of their learning process, not just in the classroom, but also potentially for homework scenarios and things like that. We want to be concerned about the students' families having this access, either connectivity because of challenges that may exist because of income or location. So not just schools, but students too. We're talking when we talk this digital equity. So what kind of solutions are out there to curb this challenge, Jason?
Well, you know, this is one of those things, you know, if you read through the Horizon report, you're going to see that, you know, yeah, they understand that there's an issue, and it's very easily identifiable that, you know, that reliable and affordable internet access and the and you know, it's something we know, it's something that we have to address, but solutions are really difficult, and you know, and that's why it's on the Horizon report as a potential obstacle. A few of the things that have been promoted and are kind of being worked on from a federal perspective anyways, we had from a couple of years ago, you may remember hearing about the Connect Ed initiative out of the Department of Education. And part of that Connect Ed initiative was something called everyoneon.org. And essentially what that website is a resource for low-income families to be able to connect with local ISPs to have access to affordable internet access. So they can they provide some of those contacts where if a family qualifies through the federal school lunch program, so for free or reduced lunches, they can receive internet access for less than $10 or for about $10 a month, with no equipment costs or anything like that. There's just some very loose kind of parameters that they have to be able to meet with that. And then they also have the opportunity to get wireless access through that as well. So there are different programs through AT&T or Verizon that are similar, that have a similar kind of a scope with them that allows them to provide some of that wireless broadband or using a traditional ISP through, you know, Cox or CenturyLink or Roadrunner, or I don't know, it's not even Roadrunner, Comcast, whatever kind of cable company or phone company you have in your area, they can sign up for these things, and lower income families be able to afford internet access at $10 a month. So that's the goal of that program. The other initiative that I've seen most recently that has been pretty compelling as far as where things are going is the 1 million project through Sprint. This is their mission with this project is over the course of the next 5 years to get 1 million high school students in low income and rural communities access to the internet using free equipment that's provided by Sprint and subsidized by Google. So this program here again would give students cell phones or hotspots or tablets that can connect to Sprint's network and give them free unlimited data for the life of the device and help those students have connection to the internet when they're away from school. So these two programs are, and there are many more other things out there where you can try and find assistance for those people that are that have a lower income that may have financial barriers to getting access to the internet.
Very good. Yeah, I was kind of stunned as I began reading the article in the Horizon report. Right off the bat, it said 5 million households in the United States with school-age children are not privy to high-speed services. That's the same thing it's saying here on this infographic. 7 out of 10 teachers assign online homework. 5 million U.S. families have no internet. 4 out of 10 low-income teens have no smartphone. 5 out of 10 low-income teens have no tablet. And without home internet, students are cut off from future success. So, you know, it's really driving at home that the need is there. And it's really neat that Sprint and Google are teaming up to do this 1 million project that they have out there. So great stuff. I also noticed over on everyoneon.org that they have an initiative to help people learn how to use the internet, basically. So I had often heard digital equality or equity, getting that broadband access, and then also another term, and now it escapes me, I have it written here, digital the digital divide, and the fact that oftentimes people that don't have the internet also don't know how to properly use it, or to dive deeper than just some basic game playing or whatever it may be. And over on everyoneon.org, they have a whole section on how to use the internet to connect with friends and family, to save money, to discover ways to stay healthy, to find a job, to educate yourself, so that people can dive deeper and make more use of it for those that aren't familiar with all those capabilities. So lots of things being hit on with these different initiatives that are out there.
Yeah, and all of that is really super important, you know, that whole concept of digital literacy, and, you know, and that's not just low-income families, that's everybody. You know, we have this abundance of resources at our fingertips, and if you don't know what to do with it, you know, that can be, you're either squandering something, you know, a gift that's been given for your benefit, or it could be something that's, you know, used to your detriment. And there's a lot of harmful stuff on the internet too. And how do you kind of distinguish between those things? And, you know, it's up to everybody, I think, to make sure that we're addressing those issues with both with children and adults. You know, you see you remember that commercial, Sally, with the guy who's talking to the lady, and she's like, "Oh, I'm meeting my boyfriend. He's a French model," and, you know, some scruffy looking guy. He's like, "Oh, bonjour," you know. You can tell he's not a French model, but, you know, it's on the internet, so it's true, right? But right. You know, we have all of those kinds of things, and unless people are taught how to use those things properly, it could turn into an issue.
Yep. So, Jason, do you have specific experience with students in your district that are using any of these tools to get access? Are you promoting it among your students?
We're promoting it, mm-hmm. but because of the way that we're handling all of those requests, I don't actually know about any of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in my district, you know, We're very fortunate in that our free and reduced rate of mm-hmm. students district wide is like 8%, 12%, okay. Something like that. So so we have comparatively few students that would qualify for a program like this. So I don't honestly know for sure how many of our kids are taking advantage of it, but it could be. I mean, it's anybody, you know, any kids in a Wells school that that would qualify for this program, or for the federal school lunch program, they also qualify for this. So even if they already have internet access, you know, it's still something that's worth looking into, because they could be saving some money. And, yes, exactly.
Awesome. So great to get the word out. It's not just the Omaha area; it's across the entire nation, and. Yep. Folks are already participating. I'm sure many Well schools have students participating in the free and reduced lunch programs. And so why not share this information and help them have more affordable internet if they don't have it yet. So very good.
Yeah. And if you go to everyoneon.org, there are resources on there for promoting, you know, they have promotional materials and things like that. You can print out flyers, you can send home. And those kinds of things. So spend some time on that website and learn a little bit more about the program and how things work. And I think that'll be you know, that'll be a good way to get the information out and spread the word.
Great. So if you are doing this in your school district, have experience with it, or have additional questions about the programs or whatever it may be, please do send us a note. You can email us at wellstech@wells.net or comment in all different ways via our show notes website over at wellstech.wells.net. We'd love to hear from you and share your experience so others can benefit from it as well. So thanks, Jason, for the great discussion and leading us to those resources. I had no idea they were out there, so we're all better off for that discussion for sure. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so we will move on. I just want to make a quick mention of Wells Now, things happening in the Wells. Let's see if I can share my screen again. I think we may have mentioned this once before on the podcast, but good to repeat. Wells has a new movie about Martin Luther coming out very soon. It's titled A Return to Grace, Luther's Life and Legacy. And you can watch the preview here on the page. But you can also encourage your congregation to host a screening of this movie in your local movie theater. So they're using a service called Tug, which I hadn't heard about before. But it's pretty neat. You sign up for hosting a screening and basically pre-sell tickets to it. So if you sell enough tickets within your congregation to come and watch the movie in the movie theater, then they'll host the private screening for you. And there's no cost to you. Actually, I think you get a portion of the movie ticket price to your congregation. And so it's a win-win-win all the way around because you get to see this great movie in a theater setting and you get to see it before it's released for Reformation 500 celebration. So if you are in a ministry setting and would like to consider this, we'll have a link in our show notes and all the details about signing up for hosting a screening of A Return to Grace are available on this webpage from the wells.net website. So look for that and consider it in your congregation. I'm looking forward to it. I hope that we're going to get a screening here in New Ulm. I know that some people at St. Paul's and St. John's, our two Wells churches here in town, are looking into this. So I'm excited and hopeful that this will happen for us here.
That's really neat. Yeah, I think we've got one of our congregations here is trying to organize one of those too. So that's a really neat thing.
Looking forward to the new movie. All right, Jason, we have made it to our Picks of the Week segment. And as a guest host, we'd love it if you would lead off that section.
Absolutely. So my pick of the week is the Electric Motors Catalyst from Tinkering Labs. This is a hardware kit. You get it in this box like you see over here on the right-hand side of the screen. And it's basically a bunch of pieces that you can then use to accomplish different challenges. So you have these challenge cards that come in the kit, and it's all real open-ended stuff, like make a machine that can scramble an egg, or make a car with suspension, or make something that will draw circles on a piece of paper, or something like that. So they're all open-ended, and really focus on trying to get kids to use their creativity to solve different kinds of problems and things like that. So you get real hardware, they're real bolts and real screws and wing nuts, and they have electric motors that go in there, a little battery pack. You get some springs and other parts that go in there, hold things together with rubber bands and markers, and it's just super cool. So you can pick up the Catalyst. It's $45 right now. I think there's a price increase is in the works. So if you order it soon, then you should be able to get it for less than that. And then you can also get a 10 pack for $400. So that'd be a class set. The idea would be to have kids work in small groups. So, you know, have them work in groups of two or three to kind of talk about the different challenges and work through things that are going on with that. And then you can also sign up for an educator discount. And the educator discount is only 5%. So it's not much, but it's something anyways to acknowledge that, you know, budgets are limited and those kinds of things. And it basically just takes care of shipping, which is still totally worth it. But I got this for a Christmas present for my 11-year-old, and it's been hours of enjoyment. It's been a lot of fun. And then I also very recently had a chance to work with kindergartners using these kits in a classroom setting. And I'm working on a highlight video for it. I'm making sure I have permission from teachers and parents and everybody, make sure that I can publicize that to the world. But once that's available, I will send that out on the hashtag, and people should be able to check that out as
Super
well.
Fun.
So that's my pick.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're so fun. I can't say enough good things about it. And the company is great to work with. And if you want to see these in person, another plug. I'm just going to do this to you, Sally.
Go for it.
There's still registration is still available for the Nebraska Educational Technology Association Spring Conference in sunny Omaha. It's going to be absolutely beautiful here the end of April. It's only a four-hour drive from New Ulm, by the way. It's a 2 or 3 day conference, lots of really great things going on. So if you check out the, and I plugged this last time too, but, I'll send you the links, Sally, to the website. But here again, you know, for $140 for a 2 day conference, you know, you get tons of sessions, and you also can come and visit me. I'd be happy to see people that make their way down for the NEDA conference. So encourage you guys to check that out.
That's pretty NEDA, Jason. Had to say it.
Wah wah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I set myself up for that one.
Tell me about these scrambled eggs. Have you tasted any of them?
You know, we haven't done the scrambled eggs project.
Okay.
Just because well, it's not that we're not brave. It's okay. Just that we just haven't decided to tackle that one yet. But once we get to that point, I will definitely be sure to share it out.
All right. We want to hear how they taste. I'm assuming the robot just shakes up a raw egg. Is that the concept?
Well, the concept is like what our prototype was to take those. There are a couple of 90-degree angled ones,
sure.
And then there's a longer one. So we'd set kind of like a tripod to keep it stable, and then have a motor on the chassis, and then attach a fork to it in a bowl underneath, and then turn it on and have it stir it up like that. But
okay.
We've got lots of there, but see, it's completely open-ended. So there, you know, there's so many different ways that we can scramble an egg. We'll try and figure that one out. So I'll be sure to document that when we try that project out.
Awesome. What kind of things did your kindergartners do? Did they draw with markers and that kind of thing?
There were a couple of them. A couple of them were, or not a couple of them. A lot of them were more intrigued by like, what could they make it look like? So a lot of kids thought that the chassis looked kind of like a ladybug. So they bolted legs onto it, and then they said, "Here, this is my ladybug." And I was like, "Oh, great! You know, now what else can we do with this?" And you know, so they kind of got thinking about that a little bit, and then you know, there was one group of kids made a ladybug, and then they said, "Well, we want to make a ladybug helicopter. That's a great idea." So, you know, they built things up and they put propellers on it and they turned on the motor and it started spinning stuff around. So,
cool.
It's just so much fun to see, you know, to see how they come up with these different ideas, and, you know, how it's not intimidating to them. Like I gave them very few directions. I just said, you know, here, we're just going to check these things out. We're going to see how it goes. And, you know, I'm just interested to see what you come up with. And, you know, there were a couple of questions to begin with, like, okay, what does this do? And how does this thing work? And, and then, you know, there was one girl in particular, she was just like, "Well, and we're going to try this. And if it doesn't work, we're just going to try something else." I'm just like, "Oh, that's just perfect." You know, out of the mouths of babes, that's exactly what we want our teachers to do. So, so, you know, it's just really, can't say too many good things about it. I really, really enjoy seeing the kids work with them. And, you know, they're it's simple and open-ended and very durable. You know, it's good stuff.
Awesome. I will throw a couple of YouTube links that I watched yesterday after you told me about it that show kind of a box opening, what all's in the box, and then another one that shows, I think, 20 projects in 10 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. Kids just doing all kinds of cool stuff with it. So that'll give you more of a flavor of it, but we'd love to see your kindergarten highlights if you do are able to share that. Very fun stuff.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for that pick of the week. I wouldn't be surprised if one shows up in the Draper household in the not too distant future, to be honest.
Outstanding. Hey, I want to see an unboxing.
There you go. All right. My pick of the week is coding related. It's from our friends at code.org. And I'm sure we've talked about, perhaps glanced over this page in the past, but if you go to the code.org page, there's a link in their top menu that takes you to teach. And they have all kinds of different resources here, specifically age-oriented elementary, middle school, high school links, and then additional resources from their community and all their different coding projects that are out there. Recently, I came across an article geared toward middle school teachers, and they say grades 7 to 9, so upper elementary in our Wells elementary schools. And they've actually released a new curriculum for this age group that can be a single semester or a full year curriculum called Computer Science Discoveries. And they've mapped out 6 units of study, problem solving, the internet and web development, programming, interactive games and animations, the design process, data and society, and the Internet of Things. And for each of those, they have standards-based lesson plans and all kinds of coding things available to assist in carrying out the lessons. So the different coding scenarios are right there on their website. This is new, like I said, for middle school age, but you can explore the elementary school links here and find 5 different elementary geared programming things. They offer different training sessions around them. And then at the high school level as well, they have a course that they recommend, and then they have the AP Computer Science Principles course available as well. So if you're looking to introduce computer science in your school district or your Wells schools, this very well may be a perfect place to start, because they have the curriculum developed here for you, and you can make use of it, and some of it is just brand new and there for you to dive into. So I don't think any specific programming background is required of teachers to make use of these. They really walk you through everything you need to do and learn in the lesson plans that they make available, and you can certainly learn right along with your students. So I can't recommend code.org highly enough. I think their resources are just excellent, and they're really supporting the introduction of STEM learning, specifically coding and those kind of things at all grade levels. So definitely do check out Computer Science Discoveries for grades 7 through 9.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, Sally, because hey, there are so many awesome resources on code.org. Mm-hmm. And there's just a ton of funding behind it. And you saw the opportunity. You can go to those free workshops, and they'll send a trainer to your school if you've got enough people to sign up for it. So, like a Kettle Moraine, or, even if
district level things or whatever.
Well, yeah, but even, even like, Kettle Moraine Lutheran or Sheboygan or
larger
help
school.
Me out with your school. Well, but
St. Paul's in New Ulm.
What's the one in New Ulm?
Yeah,
what's the one in high school?
Oh, Minnesota Valley. Sure. And the surrounding elementary schools.
I just totally lost it for a little bit there. But, any one of those organizations, if they can get 15 people to come to it, they'll send a trainer down and take you through the whole thing. And it's a really a valuable, beneficial process to go through. And, since you brought up code.org, the co-founder of code.org, Hadi Partovi, is going to be one of our keynote speakers at the NIDA conference. So I'm just throwing that out there. I'm just telling you, there's lots of opportunity for people to sign up for something like this. So I'm just saying it's an option.
It's worth it, huh? Excellent. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate you putting that little plug in, and definitely worth the look. All right, we have one more segment to share on today's show, and that is our ministry resource segment. Recently, we've kind of revamped ministry resources, and we're doing specialized looks at different things that can help you in your ministry. And I had to grin as I was kind of contemplating and kind of thinking back to the days when my husband was in the parish serving as a pastor, and I was always helping out with different projects and things around church. And it's not always glamorous when you're in that role. Maybe it's not ever glamorous, but I think it is. It's just sometimes you actually have to kind of roll up your sleeves and do some of that dirty work in the church or school office, some of that communication stuff and designing these events and things like that and promoting them. And one of the main tools that I've found to help in that in so many different ways is a website called Avery Design and Print. And it's from the folks that make Avery labels. So I'm sure many, many, many of you have used return address labels or mailing labels from Avery. And basically, you can go on the website. You have to sign up for a free account, totally worth it. But you can pick all different kinds of labels and then design them right there in the software. You can add your own imagery. You can use their imagery. You can import mailing list in Excel format. So if you want to do a mail merge, so much easier than doing mail merge in Microsoft Word, in my opinion. And then you have all this versatility with what you get out of the system. So you can design them to print the same thing across all the label spaces on your page, or you can customize each individual one. And then you can print to PDF if you want to save it for printing it again and again. So I'll be honest that I don't always buy all the Avery labels that I'm designing for. Sometimes I think, oh, it'd be nice to have 10 of these about table card size or whatever, for whatever project I'm doing. And I'll go and design them using a label that's that dimensions and things, but then I'll print them on regular paper and cut them apart and use them as regular paper, or I'll print them on regular paper and glue them onto a project that I'm doing as a label or something. So it's not required that you have those labels in your printer in order to make use of this, and that's kind of the beauty of it. I've used it for all kinds of projects, and they have, you know, circular layouts and oval layouts. They have all different sizes, very versatile tool, and it's like having a design studio, and simple and fun and easy to do. You get different fonts, different colors. It'll lay out fonts like on a curve if you want them to be, or whatever you're looking for. I've had great results with it and designed a whole lot of things, bulletin inserts. I used to work with a PrayerPal group, and I designed all kinds of things to go around our PrayerPal theme, and they all had the same look and feel to them because I'd used this design tool and just used different layouts, sizes, and things for the labels and the templates. So it's kind of wishy-washy to think of using a label creator to do other things, but you can use it in so many ways and easily multiply the quantity of things that you're printing very, very simply. So definitely check out avery.com. There'll be a ministry resource link in our show notes, and we have some overview videos and things like that to share as well. So check it out.
That's really creative, Sally. Thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. You had no idea that existed. Super cool.
Yeah, very easy. So, all right, we have a featured video of the week, and this time it's a video from our friends at Promevo. Promevo is one of our ShopWells partners, and in particular, they're who we would go to for Chromebook purchases. They have a great team there. It's a nationwide company, and I recently discovered their YouTube video channel. They were doing a face-off between two different kind of higher-end Chromebooks, the Chromebook Flip C302 from Asus versus the Chromebook Plus from Samsung, and just kind of walk you through the different features of the machines and which one they think maybe is best. and for what reasons. And that's great if you're in the market for a Chromebook, but they have tons of other videos on their Promevo TV channel on YouTube. So definitely check them out. Probably worth a subscription, especially if you're a Chromebook school, because they're constantly putting out videos related to Chromebooks. And they recently won a Google Cloud Partner Award for devices and success with their ecosystems. And so I think they are a great vendor to follow, and you want to check out their YouTube channel. So that's what I have there. Yeah. All right, Jason, we are about to wrap things up for the day. I think we survived very well without Martin, although I'll be happy to welcome him back next week when he's back from vacation. The two of us are going to talk with Pastor Steve Daly, who's a big fan of something called bullet journaling. It's an analog system in the digital world. It's actually paper and pencil, and it has a big impact on his daily productivity and how he works with technology and his ministry. So I think you'll enjoy the interview and some of the other things we have to discuss around bullet journaling. That'll be next Tuesday on Wells Tech, so be sure to come back to wellstech.wells.net for that. Jason, thanks so much for your time today and sharing your experiences. They're always insightful to us Wells Techers, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity. It's a lot of fun, and hopefully you keep on inviting me back.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will see you next week on Wells Tech. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye.